Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 18, entitled Pariket, Cursed by a Brahmana Boy. That's number 26. Pratirudendriya pranam mano buddhim uparatam stana tayat param praptam brahma bhutam avikriyam prati rudendriya prana prati rudendriya prana mano buddhim uparatam mano buddhim uparatam stana trayat param praptam stana trayat param praptam brahma bhutam avikriyam brahma bhutam avikriyam Pratirudendriya prana mano buddhim uparatam stana trayat param praptam brahma bhutam avikriyam. Ladies, Prati Purendriya Prana Mano Buddhim Uparatam Stanatraya Paramprattam Brahma Hutam Avikriyam Prati Purendriya Prana Pratirudha, restrained. Indriya, the sense organs. Prana, air of respiration. Mana, the mind. Buddhim, intelligence. Uparatam, inactive. Stana, places. Trayat, from the three. Param, transcendental. Praptam, achieved. Brahmabhutam, qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute. Avikriyam, unaffected. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Muni's sense organs, breath, mind, and intelligence were all restrained from material activities, and he was situated in a trance apart from the three, wakefulness, dream, and unconsciousness. Having achieved a transcendental position qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute. Please repeat. The Muni's sense organs, breath, mind, and intelligence were all restrained from material activities. And he was situated in a trance apart from the three, wakefulness, dream, and unconsciousness. Having achieved a transcendental position qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute. Purport. It appears that the Muni, in whose hermitage the king entered, was in yogic trance. The transcendental position is attained by three processes, namely the process of jnana, or theoretical knowledge of transcendence, the process of yoga, or factual realization of trance by manipulation of the physiological and psychological functions of the body, and the most approved process of bhakti yoga, or the engagement of senses in the devotional service of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita also we have the information of the gradual development of perception from matter to a living entity. Our material mind and body develop from the living entity, the soul, and being influenced by the three qualities of matter, we forget our real identity. The jnana process theoretically speculates about the reality of the soul. But bhakti yoga factually engages the spirit soul in activities. The perception of matter is transcended to still subtler states of the senses. The senses are transcended to the subtler mind, and then to breathing activities, and gradually to intelligence. Beyond the intelligence, the living soul is realized by the mechanical activities of the yoga system or practice of meditation, restraining the senses, regulating the breathing system, and applying intelligence to rise to the transcendental position. This trance stops all material activities of the body. The king saw the Muni in that position. He also saw the Muni as follows. Om Ajnana Timidanda Sagyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Nmilitam Jena Tasmai Sigurve Namana Ugam Guruti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Girim Yarkipatam Amundi Sigurum Vinitani Paramananda Madhavam Sri Chaitanya Ishwaram. Translation again. The Muni's sense organs, breath, mind, and intelligence were all restrained from material activities. And he was situated in a trance apart from the three, wakefulness, dream, and unconsciousness. Having achieved a transcendental position qualitatively equal with the Supreme Absolute. So here, Srila Prabhupada is very nicely describing what most people in yogic circles these days consider hatha yoga. And as Srila Prabhupada is pointing out here, it's a very mechanical process. And coming upon this Muni in his hermitage, engaged in this activity, saw that the sage was in trance, which is generally the goal of those who are engaged in these mechanical processes. Their idea is to become focused upon the supersoul, the Lord in the heart. Or at least, at a minimum, to be able to recognize that one is not, one is a spirit soul and not this body. And of course, this is something that was applicable in previous ages, where certain facilities were there. The yogis could go to a hermitage in a very quiet and a sacred place and engage in such activities. And even to this day, you can, Srila Prabhupada comments that there are yogis who come down who are hundreds of years old. In one lecture, Srila Prabhupada was pointing out how in his youth he personally saw different sages who were hundreds of years old. Of course, this is beyond the understanding of the intelligentsia, the so-called intelligentsia of present society, who consider that how is this that someone can live for hundreds of years? But we take it as fact from the Vedic literatures, and we take it as fact from the pure devotees of the Lord who are giving us this information. But even still today, you can go to some of these places and sometimes you see different sadhus coming out from a little cave. I went to Badrinath one year, and I was walking up past the temple as you go further up where Srila Vyasadeva's cave is, where if you go inside, there's a beautiful murti of Vyasadeva speaking to Sukadeva Goswami. Very transcendental. But you can go up and up further, and I believe that's where, up a little further is where Bhimasen went after the battle of Kurukshetra, as described, that he went to this place and he left his body. And they have a nice little temple there that memorializes that. But in the course of going up, I remember we were going through these little pathways, not very big. In some areas, they're a little bit bigger, so those who can't walk it, they're carried by palanquin, which is really quite amazing. Two carriers have this one person in the palanquin, and they work their way up, all the way up. And you can imagine, it's not, I mean, just without a palanquin, it's quite a task walking. But to take someone on palanquin all the way up, just see their devotion. They're so determined to go to these wonderful places. But in the course of walking up, I recall looking to the side, and often little corners, sometimes you would see, in various little corners, you would see little cutouts, little caves in the hillside, mountainside, and there'd be a little door, an actual little door. And I saw one sadhu, he came out. It was just, he was just a little fellow. He opened up his door. He got out and he stood up. When he stood up, he was medium height, but he would crawl into this little cave and whatever he's engaged in, whatever kind of tapasya it may be. But he walked in, he came out and closed the door behind him and locked it up. He had a little padlock. And then he got down and went off toward the Ganga to take his bath. And in some places, they weren't so developed. You would just see some burlap sack right over the entranceway. So still to this day, you can go to such places and you can find these sadhus who are engaged in various austerities. Here, Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that this transcendental process or position is attained by three processes. There's jnana, yoga, and then bhakti. Of course, jnana is, as the Bhagavatam explains, Vasudeva Param Jnanam. The real purpose of jnana or yoga, or cultivation of knowledge, is to understand Vasudeva. There's no other purpose for... Of course, there are so many side goals that one may envision or strive for. But the real purpose of jnana, Vasudeva Param Jnanam, that Vasudeva is the real goal of developing knowledge. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, right? Vidaisya sarve aham eva vedya. Krishna is understood. The absolute truth is understood by study of the Vedas. And otherwise, there's we can speculate all day about what the absolute truth is, and never get anywhere. But the real purpose is to understand Vasudeva. And here Prabhupada points out that that is one of the processes. The other process, or that process, would be a theoretical knowledge of transcendence. It's theoretical. Okay, we're understanding that the absolute truth is not this, it's not that. But what is it? And one may come to a theoretical understanding of what the absolute truth is. And when one becomes fixed in that, it is a level of transcendence. One realizes that, well, I'm not this body, that the suffering that's associated with this material body is not affecting me directly. It's simply the senses which are reacting. So it's one level. The other process Srila Prabhupada points out is the process of yoga. Vasudeva para yoga. The real purpose of yoga is to understand Vasudeva. There's no other goal. Again, it's something that's very fashionable in the present age to practice yoga and go to some institute on a corner, and everybody has their yogic dress, and they know all of these symbols, and there's a little bit of artwork, maybe burn a little incense. So that's yoga. And then afterwards, everyone just sort of socializes or goes back to work or does whatever they want to do, go to a party or something. So really, that's not the purpose. But the real purpose is to understand or realize Him or the personality of Godhead. And the other process Srila Prabhupada points out here is the most approved process of bhakti yoga, or the engagement of the senses in devotional service of the Lord. This is considered the topmost process, as Krishna himself says, and we accept Krishna's word. We accept Krishna as the absolute truth. So when he says that the highest of all processes is bhakti yoga, and that one who is engaged in that devotional service is the highest of yogis, and he's the highest of jnanis, we accept that. And that, and as Prabhupada points out here, that process of bhakti is engagement of the senses in the devotional service of the Lord. These processes are also, as Prabhupada points out here, step-by-step revealed in the Bhagavad Gita, where one understands that first there are the material elements, bhumir apo nalo vayu kamano bhudir eva cha. There are certain elements which are there in the material creation that comprise this material world. Everything is basically these elements, although there may be the scientists like to expand on it in all of their speculations and studies. But Krishna makes it very simple by explaining that bhumir, apo, nalo, vayu, that there's earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And these are the basic elements of the material creation. And that there's a subtler, more advanced, as Prabhupada points out here in the purport, there's a gradual elevation that occurs, that one then realizes a more subtler things like the mind, intelligence, and ego. And the bhakti yoga process recognizes all of them, but Krishna gives, again, more information by pointing out that the living being, aparayam itastvanya prakritim virime param, that the living entity is actually of a higher nature. So, the yogis, they may be involved in so many austerities and with the intent of understanding the absolute truth. But until one comes to that process or to that level of recognizing that the living being is separate from these material elements, and that he has a relationship with the Supreme Absolute Truth, it's not perfect. It's not complete, as Prabhupada points out here. That the most approved process of bhakti yoga, or the engagement of senses in the devotional service of the Lord, is considered the topmost. And that sort of life on that level of understanding, Prabhupada very nicely described it the other day during the Sunday lecture. He was describing how this is called the apakrita position, whereas all of the others, they're considered prakrita. They're still within the material realm. Purushak prakriti stohi bunki prakritir jangana. And because they're still affected or disturbed or contaminated by the modes of material nature. It's very nice. Srila Prabhupada points out here in the translation that he was in a trance apart from the three, wakefulness, dream, and unconsciousness, free from the modes of the effects of the modes of material nature. So that is the apakrita life. Whereas the others, those who are still speculating or engaged in yogic practices, not understanding what the goal of that yoga is, they're still, they may be to a level of transcendence, but it's not perfect. Even the jnanis and yogis, they're also considered transcendentalists. But they're not perfect in their practice, in their understanding, because, again, they're not understanding that the goal is to be engaged in transcendental activity. The jnana process theoretically speculates about the reality of the soul. But bhakti yoga factually engages the spirit in activities. So the real goal is to be engaged in transcendental activities. As Prabhupada was pointing out again during this wonderful lecture he gave on Sunday, that the real perfection of austerities, the real perfection of development of knowledge, the real perfection of whatever works we may be engaged in, is to be engaged in devotional service. And he finished his lecture so nicely by pointing out how in the present age, of course, what we're seeing here was happening so many years ago, thousands of years ago. So in those days, the practitioners had certain qualifications. We don't have those facilities now. Again, we can't go to some secure, sacred, quiet place. It's not possible. You may be in the most pristine place, but then all of a sudden you hear from 30,000 feet an airplane flying overhead. It may be very idyllic in that regard. But again, we're disturbed by so many things and so many circumstances in this day and age. So the process most recommended in this day and age, as Prabhupada was pointing out, is the Sankirtan Yajna. Kalir Dosha Nidhe Rajan. The process for becoming sufficiently purified or properly engaged is to be engaged in the process of chanting the holy names of the Lord. What is that last verse of the Bhagavatam? Nama Sankirtanam Yasya Sarva Papa Pranashanam. The Bhagavatam tells us that the chanting of the holy names of the Lord is so powerful that it delivers one from all of the pap or the sinful activities that were knowingly or unknowingly engaged in throughout the day. Unfortunately, people don't realize that, although they may be so in their eyes pious, or they're engaged in good works. Still, because it's not free from the modes of material nature, it's not considered apakrita activities. Instead, it's considered prakrita. They're engaging in activities according to the modes of material nature. Oh, this, it's a good thing to do. Let's help the birds, or let's help the insects, or the snakes, or let's help such and such suffering condition. It's still not complete. Nama sankirtanam sarva papa paranashanam. But the holy name of the Lord is so powerful that it delivers one from all of the sinful reactions, and it relieves one of all material suffering. Not only is one delivered from all of the sinful reactions that we may sometimes engage in or be implicated in, or from the past, not necessarily even this lifetime. But one is relieved of all of that, and then relieved of all of the sufferings that come in accord with that activity, with that past activity. So, the real process is, as Prabhupada points out here, is the process of bhakti yoga, which is considered the most approved process. The process which is best recommended for the miseries of this material age. This muni, this yogi, was engaged in his trance, trying to also come to that platform of pure consciousness, and by arrangement of the Lord, as we heard yesterday, as Prabhupada pointed out in the previous purport, by the arrangement of the Lord, what was the word that he used? Can't remember the exact word that Srila Prabhupada used, but by some, not accident, but by fate, the king came across this sage, and how he responds to his meeting is to be explained in the following verses, which is going to be quite interesting. So we'll end there. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
You're saying at one point you quoted that verse that explains the five elements. Then this from Bhagavad Gita, and you said that scientists they like to expand on these five elements and with a lot of their mental speculation. And I was wondering if you can explain how some of the German, like, scientists and philosophers, they studied the Vedas. I know Schrodinger used to study Upanishads. He's basically like the father of like quantum physics. And also, I heard in one class where from Radhanath Swami, he was saying that Charles Darwin got his theory of evolution from the Vedas, but he twisted it with his mental speculation. And also, a lot of people say that Albert Einstein used to read Bhagavad Gita, but I don't know if that's that's clear information. I also heard that might have been a rumor, but I was wondering if you could talk on that.
You should ask the scientist.
It's always good to have some documentation of these things. I mean, Srila Prabhupada many times did say that, and there is a concept of evolution in the Vedic literature. It's the evolution of the soul through the different kinds of material bodies. So that concept of evolution is there, but if you don't understand the existence of the soul, then a scientist like Darwin will kind of misunderstand and think it's the material body that's evolving and not the soul. It is a fact that some of the scientists who were responsible for quantum physics studied, you know, the Upanishads and got some ideas from there. So that's about all I can say about it. I don't know if he did or not. I mean, some scientists did. You know, like physicist Robert Oppenheimer, who was the scientist in charge of developing the atomic bomb for America in World War II. You know, he studied the Bhagavad Gita, and when the first atomic bomb was tested at Alamogordo in New Mexico, you know, he was asked about it, and he said it was like, you know, Krishna revealing to Arjuna his form, you know, time I am, you know, the destroyer of the worlds, you know, like. So he was quoting those verses from the Bhagavad Gita. So, yeah, as far as Einstein, I'm not sure if he studied the Gita or not.
Any other questions or comments on that? Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.